Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 21st, 2017. A top British diplomat tells the UN Security Council the South Sudan government has failed to honor its commitment.
What the government of South Sudan says bears no relation to what it does. In June, we saw humanitarian access being blocked 100 times, the highest month in 2017 so far. In addition, ceasefire monitors have been blocked on multiple occasions by government troops.
And widespread fuel shortages in Juba have many residents parking their cars at home.
There is no vehicles. They come only one taxi, but 100 people want to come with that 100, that one taxi. Even to ask a fuel, yeah, those people who are supplying us, they've power, they refuse these days, no fuel.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We first go to the United Nations headquarters, where the Security Council met on Thursday to discuss the dire situation in South Sudan. The UN Assistant Secretary for Peacekeeping Operations, Al-Qasim Wani, told council members that violence continues to be the order of the day in South Sudan. Wani says government troops are active fighting in several parts of the country.
South Sudan is in need of an effective and credible ceasefire. Since the announcement of a declaration of a unilateral ceasefire by the government in June, there have been concerning reports of active military operations in the Equatorial and in the Upper Nile.
In May, President Kiir declared ceasefire throughout the country, but aid agencies continue to help civilians caught up in fighting between government troops and rebels loyal to Riek Machar. Wani says South Sudan government troops are fighting in Upper Nile, forcing civilians to flee to Ethiopia.
On 7 July, ANMIS received a credible report that the SPLA has moved towards Machyang in the Upper Nile, after which heavy fighting was reported. The aim of the offensive seems to be capturing opposition-held areas all the way to Pagak. Similarly, clashes have continued between the SPLA IO and SPLA troops near Torit in eastern Equatoria, where ANMIS has recently had to reinforce its presence due to heavy fighting in the area.
U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Michelle Sisson, criticized the Kiir administration for not controlling its forces.
Rather than hold their fire, government forces are opening up new battlefronts. These military operations are forcing thousands of people from their homes. The fighting has forced dozens of humanitarian workers to be evacuated, leaving even more civilians without any help.
The U.S. diplomat warned South Sudanese leaders to end the violence or face the consequences.
If South Sudan's leaders do not participate in this high-level forum in good faith and stick to its deadlines, the United States will need to review our position and priorities on support for the peace agreement and its implementing bodies.
South Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, Akui Bona Malwal, says his government is serious about ending the fighting in the country.
The government of national unity has the political will and desire to continue to work closely with ONUMIS and the humanitarian actors to address any pending issues.
But the UK's Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Matthew Rykoff, says the government of South Sudan has records of not sticking to its words.
What the government of South Sudan says bears no relation to what it does. In June, we saw humanitarian access being blocked 100 times, the highest month in 2017 so far. In addition, ceasefire monitors have been blocked on multiple occasions by government troops from investigating incidents of reported violence. This is all in clear violation of the peace agreement and all at the cost of the South Sudanese people.
That's the Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Matthew Rykoff, talking at the UN briefing yesterday in New York. Residents of Juba are facing severe fuel shortages, and some of them have parked their cars at home, as we hear from Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
During morning rush hour at Juba's Konyokonyo market, dozens of people rush to try to jump into a commuter taxi that is licensed to carry up to 14 passengers as the driver calls out for passengers. In the past, many public transport vehicles could be seen at the bus park in Konyokonyo and along other streets of Juba. But today, commuter taxis are very few due to fuel shortages. Hundreds of people stand at a street corner, sometimes for hours, to wait for the next bus. Betty Yangi is a trader who sells juice at the customs market. In the past, Yangi has relied on someone who supplies electricity to all traders at the market to run her juice blender and power her fridge, something she needs to cool the juice. But for the past week, the electricity supplier has stopped coming because of the fuel shortages. Yangi says since fuel shortages worsened over the last 3 days, her business has been slow. She says the 3 girls she employs have been reporting to work later than usual because they have to wait much longer for public transportation.
There is no vehicles. They come only one taxi, but 100 people want to come with that one taxi. Now, even this one came in the morning, the leg got a problem because of fighting the door of the taxi. Even to ask a fuel, those people who are supplying us the power, they refuse these days, no fuel.
A liter of petrol or diesel goes for 22 South Sudanese pounds at filling stations across South Sudan. But most fuel stations are closed because they have little or no fuel to sell. Some people sell fuel on the black market. 1.5 liter bottle of fuel that went 400 South Sudanese pounds last week cost 1,000 South Sudanese pounds today. And a 20-liter jerrican, which was selling at 7,000 South Sudanese pounds yesterday, now costs more than 8,000 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Yangi says she will have to lay off workers so she can still make a little profit.
Everything is not going on. Even I was deciding either to close the door until the thing become normal, or I stop some workers, and how are they going to benefit? How are they going to... They are helping themselves with this job.
Harriet Momoni is a shopkeeper at the customs market. Is speaking in Arabic, Momoni says she stood at the roadside waiting for taxi for nearly 3 hours this morning. Momoni says public transport has become expensive. She says if you take a raksha, it is 50 South Sudanese pounds, which is expensive. Today, she said, she got to work very late at 9 a.m. because there was no means of transport. Many public transport vehicle drivers, like Baby Juma, say they have parked their vehicles at home because of the fuel shortages. Juma says he parked his car after he queued at the only filling station selling fuel in town. Speaking in Arabic, Juma says the station sold out before it was his turn to fill up.
There's no way for one to get the fuel, and that is why I have parked my vehicle. We see that things are not the way they used to be. Getting fuel has become difficult, and if we buy it from the exorbitant price in the black market, we might not make any profit.
Edward Ogoro operates a taxi on Airport Road. Ogoro says due to the fuel shortages and extremely high fuel prices, he has had to increase his transport fares.
We are working so that we get something to feed our families, but now we cannot get fuel easily, except in the black market, and in most cases we fail to get it even in the black market.
Fuel shortages have been persistent in South Sudan ever since the government imposed price controls, fixing the price of fuel and petrol at 22 South Sudanese pounds per liter. Last week, Finance Minister Stephen Diu Dau announced plans to lift government subsidies on fuel and allow market forces of supply and demand to determine the price of fuel. But the change has yet to take effect. Earlier this week, Anyel Machar is spokesperson for the SPLM-IO Tabandeng faction, told South Sudan in Focus that much of the country has stabilized since Tabandeng Gai was installed as first vice president a year ago. He said that the economy of the country is tied to peace and tranquility, and once that happens, it will allow the government to have breathing space to then concentrate on economic recovery. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The military court trying 12 South Sudanese soldiers accused of attacking foreign aid workers and killing a South Sudanese journalist a year ago rejected the prosecutor's request to hold a session outside South Sudan to obtain testimonies from alleged rape victims. The court also refused the prosecutor's request to have the women testify via video link. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Last week, presiding judge Brigadier General Knight Bruni ordered the prosecution to present all its witnesses and alleged victims today, or the court would make a final ruling based on the evidence provided so far. Chief Prosecutor Mayele Jack failed to present the five alleged rape victims who were working in Juba at the time of the attack last July but have since left South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Jack appealed to the court to either hear the women's testimony outside the country or by video conference, since transporting the victims to Juba and managing their living expenses while in South Sudan is expensive.
Because their situation is very difficult, their coming to South Sudan will cost them a lot of money. Their living in South Sudan will cost them a lot of money.
Mayel also appealed to court to conduct a DNA testing on each of the suspects. He also called on the court to arrest 8 more army officers suspected of stealing vehicles during their attack on the Terrain Hotel last year. But the 6-judge panel refused to grant any of the prosecution's requests after defense lawyer Peter Malwal called the requests unlawful. Presiding Judge Bruni says the alleged victims must be present in court in order for the court to make a final ruling on all of the charges against the soldiers, including rape.
For the sake of justice, the court is requesting the victims must come before the court personally. And the court rejects all the requests to take the statements of the victims outside the country or through video conference, because all these requests are not leading the court to the truth.
An investigation conducted by the Associated Press last year found that dozens of soldiers broke into the Terrain Hotel compound and terrorized 8 workers and residents, while UN peacekeepers stationed nearby failed to respond to urgent phone calls for help. Judge Deng Mayel, a member of the military court handling the case, said the alleged rape victims must testify in court.
We need them. Otherwise, the Terrain will need responsibility because they were in Terrain. And if they win the case, the government will pay them.
Two Republican Guard officers denied government soldiers raped 8 workers or killed a journalist at the Terrain compound during today's testimony. Captain Ayuel Deng acknowledged that 11 of the suspects were under his command near the Terrain at the time of the attack. The soldiers are charged with murder, rape, looting, destruction of property and harassment when fighting flared up in the capital between government forces and fighters loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. The Terrain Hotel management is asking for $4.5 million for the property damaged and looted during last year's attack. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A row is brewing between state and national officials over who gets to issue motor vehicle license plates in Juba. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you run for public office, what would be your top political priority.
Politically, I think I would be a woman MP. I would put in place measures to ensure that women's financial abilities are explored, yeah, to boost their earnings and your financial status.
To reform the health sector by renovating the hospitals and providing basic necessary needs at the hospital facilities.
To reduce the hardship and the hunger in the society, honestly, because I will use my office to create so many poverty alleviation programs.
My top political priority will be education for all, because education is the foundation for all the different development sectors.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. This week, Kenya's Minister of Health ordered the shutdown of two top hotels in Nairobi after they were linked to a cholera outbreak. The minister said the hotels supplied food to an event where cholera was reported. Rahel Ombur reports from Nairobi.
The order for Nairobi's Sun Valencia and Jacaranda hotels to shut down follows allegations cholera may have been transmitted through the hotel's catering services. This is after several delegates attending a trade expo catered by the hotels this week were hospitalized with symptoms of the waterborne disease. Two cabinet ministers attending the expo were also affected. The Ministry of Health said this week that 336 possible cases of cholera have been reported in Nairobi County since May and that three people have died. Nairobi's Governor Evans Kidero told journalists that this outbreak, unlike previous ones, has spread beyond poor areas.
It's not just been people who are in the informal settlements like Mathare, like Kibera, like Mukuru, but we notice even the people from higher income areas have also fallen.
Last month, around 50 visitors to an international medical conference held at Nairobi's lavish Western Hotel were reported to have fallen ill with symptoms associated with cholera. The Ministry of Health says the latest incident at the Trade Expo is being investigated and that the samples of food, water and sewage are being tested. It is said results from the tests are expected within a week. Meanwhile, Nairobi County Health Executive Dr. Bernard Muya said all restaurants in the area are being inspected.
We are mapping out any eatery. And when I talk about eatery here, I'm even talking about any hotel, regardless of the category. Also validating the food handlers.
Minister of Health Mailu said Nairobi's water services will also be thoroughly inspected. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we return to South Sudan, where the Jubek State Parliament is calling on the national government to stop issuing vehicle license plates in Jubek State. The national government started issuing SSD number plates last year to replace the different number plates issued by each of the 28 states in South Sudan. Jubek State lawmakers say both the state and the national constitution give powers to the state government to license cars. Waki Simon Wudu has the details for the story from Juba.
Jubek State MPs passed a resolution asking Juba to stop issuing license plates following a debate in an extraordinary session this morning. Peter Kenyitombe, the State Legislative Assembly Speaker, chaired today's session.
But recently, we witnessed a very intensive existence of traffic police just enforcing people to possess a new license, and after that, you know, an order was enforced by the traffic police general that all number plates should be changed to SSD and raid all over to Juba City was carried out until this moment.
Over the past week, police officers and the army have been deployed on Juba's streets to enforce a national government order for all motorists to acquire the Unified Motor Vehicle Registration that starts with the initials SSD. Some motorists complain they have been harassed or beaten up by police, some of whom carry sticks and guns as they go about enforcing the order. Following an hour-long discussion, Jubek State lawmakers expressed their disappointment with the brutal actions of the police. Joburg State MP Mary Alias questioned the legality and powers of the national government to replace all the numbered license plates with the new ones.
The issuing of the number plates, the license belong to the states. Now, they have taken this issuing of the license and the number plates. From where do they take they get that law? We want to know that law coming from where. Because we are working with the Constitution that is governing the people of South Sudan. Honorable Speaker, we totally reject and we want the state to launch the SSD Joburg State number plate because it is our mandate.
The lawmakers also wondered why the army is involved in enforcing the order to replace the license plates when there is no law mandating soldiers to handle traffic matters on the streets. The lawmakers condemned the actions of police and soldiers implementing the order, called on officers to treat motorists with respect. Again, Assembly Speaker Tombe.
The National Traffic Police should stop issuing the new number plate until the case is resolved between the national government and between the national and the state.
The lawmakers also questioned why Joburg authorities have delayed implementing a resolution passed in March that calls for the suspension of the issuance of the SSD unified number plates without the involvement of state authorities. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says the agreement regarding the issuing of license plates is clear.
The provisions of the Constitution are very clear. In case of any dispute, raise their complaint, but not to be confrontational. So I'm advising them to seek the necessary legal procedures. Minister of Justice is the legal advisor of all the institutions at all levels.
Juba resident Oliver Modi wonders why South Sudan has issued different registration plates over the past few years.
In the Republic of South Sudan, we need really to go by the normal leveling of this number plate so that it will not disturb. Because it is not only consumed by us, the Republic, because for us, we know our states. Like if a vehicle comes from Shubet, Shubet is now a GOG state. If any vehicle comes from there, abbreviated by GOG state, it is GS. Eh? We definitely know this is a GOG state here in Juba. But when this is GS...
For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan's national football team, the Bright Stars, are in Uganda to play against Uganda's Cranes. The two teams played a goalless game in Juba last week in an African Nations Cup Championship qualifying match. As Mungume Davis Rakarinyi reports for VOA from Kampala, the Bright Stars say they believe they have all it takes to win tomorrow's game against the Cranes.
South Sudan's national team players held their final training session ahead of tomorrow's game at Lugogo Stadium in Kampala. Both players and officials say they are ready for the challenge. Striker James Moga, who is also team captain, says they have worked hard to face Uganda Cranes.
We are feeling better. We are good. We know our mistake for the last game. I think the coach start work on it. We're going to try to do our best. Let's see what will happen because it's just football, you know. But for me, I want to win.
Bright Stars coach Bilal Felix says it will be an important match because of the 0-0 score in last week's game.
Yeah, at least we need to come with something because, you know, Uganda is not a simple team in East African zone. So we need a lot of work so that we can come with good result.
Whatever the outcome of tomorrow's game, Felix says it is a learning experience for his players. The tournament features only national team players playing the domestic leagues. Qualification ties are played on a home and away two-legged basis. If the aggregate score is tied after the second leg, the away goal rule would be applied. In a draw, with each team having scored, South Sudan would qualify on away goal rule. Uganda's coach, Milutin Sojovic Micho, says he expects a tough match.
We need to give them respect, but not over-respect. Let us say, when you look in division in Africa, the analytic way of players, cousins to those in West Africa, never say die, never give up. In any way, they are not walk over.
Ugandan player Tom Matsiko says one he knows about South Sudanese players is their athletic.
As a player, you have to take each game that comes into your way. There is no underrating any club, any team, any country. So it's South Sudan that is in our way. We have to first remove them and challenge them, and then we call them as a weak team.
South Sudan defeated Djibouti to qualify in this round. The win of tomorrow's Uganda vs South Sudan match will play either Rwanda or Tanzania, who square off against each other tomorrow as well. The finals will be played in Kenya next year in February. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakalinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The UN Security Council discussed the humanitarian and political crises in South Sudan yesterday. The UN Assistant Secretary for Peacekeeping Operations, El Gassem Wayne, told council members that deadly violence continues despite the peace deal. Wayne says government troops are fighting rebels in several parts of the country, especially in the Equatoria and the Upper Nile. In May, President Kiir ordered a ceasefire throughout the country, but international aid agencies said an unarmed civilians are often caught up in the crossfire between government troops and rebels loyal to Riek Machar. U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN, Michelle Sisson, criticized the Kiir administration for not controlling its forces. Sisson said rather than hold their fire, government forces are opening up new battlefronts. With acute fuel shortages and high fuel prices, many Juba residents have to wait hours for a seat on a commuter transport vehicle these days. Due to the sky-high prices, many people say they've been forced to park their vehicles altogether. In the past, only a few public transport vehicles would be seen at the bus park in Konya Market and other spots across Juba, but today, commuter taxis are packed due to the fuel shortages. And finally, Juba state officials want the national government to stop issuing vehicle license plates in the state. The government in Juba started issuing unified SSD number plates last year to replace different number plates issued by each of the original 10 states. Juba state lawmakers say both the state and national constitutions give powers to state governments to license cars. Juba state MPs passed a resolution asking Juba to stop issuing license plates following a debate in an extraordinary session yesterday. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a song which talks about you loving your neighbor by Benjamin Laxine.
Saki mata ali sujira taki kan meskin mata dali majira taki fajal besi ukurat biri jalo tani
We have been listening to Benjamin Laxine with that song, Love Your Neighbor. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We hope you have a safe and peaceful weekend. Would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us by email at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus.